taste like?
Ooh, bacon.
I'm so hungry I could eat a skunk. Raw.
PID Radio. I'm Derek Gilbert.
And I'm Sharon Gilbert, and welcome to the new low-sugar version of PID Radio.
Sharon is truly looking into darkness tonight. In fact, she may be suffering from tunnel vision before too long.
I'm going to wrestle darkness for any donut that darkness can have.
That's right.
I'll tell you at this point.
She's begun a modified form of the Atkins diet, which basically means cutting out refined sugars, carbohydrates, and... That's not easy. I decided I couldn't do it. Yeah, I tried it, and I couldn't do it. Giving up that orange juice was too tough.
So if I sound like I'm not making any sense at some point, that means that all glucose has left my brain.
Take the rage, focus it, use it. We have plenty about which to rant tonight.
Well, we could rant about the weather.
Yeah, it is April the 3rd of 2006, and we survived a pretty severe storm here in the St. Louis area yesterday.
We did.
Yeah. Now, we've had 2 years in a row on July 4th weekend both times where we've suffered damage here. And
we were out of town.
Yeah. The fact that we stayed here, I think, saved us this time. Mm-hmm. But there was a gentleman who was killed yesterday afternoon while the storm rolled through. He was out at a state park with some friends near here, no more than 4 miles from this location.
Oh, if it's
location.
That far, it's very close.
Yeah, and a tree fell and struck him while they were trying to make their way back to their parking lot in their car. So, not as bad as what happened in Tennessee, where over 20 people were killed as the tornadoes rolled through there yesterday. So,
well, you know, it really reminded me a great deal of back in 1974, I think it was April 3rd,
74.
When tornadoes just tore through 17 states, 19 states, or something.
Yeah,
like
330
that.
Deaths.
And that's right. And it was 13 states.
Mm-hmm.
That's right. We said it was
looking at the numerology and 330 deaths.
Yeah. It did hit my hometown, and it came up just as suddenly as yesterday's storm here did, and it spawned three tornadoes that hit Madison, Indiana area, and just leveled so many things. And,
yeah.
And so when that storm system came over here yesterday, the first thing I thought of is, oh, my gosh, it looks just like it.
Yeah. Well, we were well-equipped. We had our little hand-cranked shortwave radio, which we fired up and began listening. Stan and Holly Dale would be proud of us.
We had candles.
We had candles,
flashlights with fresh batteries.
We
have fresh water down here in the basement. We had lots of snacks. Of course, I didn't get any good snacks.
Now, we were without power for 12 hours, but compared to many people in the St. Louis area, that was actually pretty good because there are some people who didn't get power restored until this afternoon. And thankfully, the only damage here to the bunker was the chimney cap blew off, which we didn't learn about until just a few minutes ago when our neighbor came over and said, it's lying in between the houses here. You want me to get that for you? So anyway, we're thankful we're here and ready to roll here with some interesting things that have happened over the weekend besides the weather.
Oh, there are so many things to talk about. And, you know, I don't know when you're going to get to this, but I may as well just put it out there on the table. Dr. Doom.
Dr. Doom.
Doom, 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 doom.
This was...
For those of you who watch Invader Zim, that's just your little treat.
Well, this was really bizarre because the story actually happened about a month ago, but it only is coming to light now because one of the attendees at a conference given at Lamar University in Texas and the first weekend in March to honor a zoologist by the name of Dr. Eric R. Pianka, and I hope I'm pronouncing his name correctly, P-I-A-N-K-A. He's an evolutionary ecologist and an expert in lizards at the University of Texas, works in Austin. He's tenured professor there. He's been there for, I think, nearly 40 years. He gave a speech before the Texas Academy of Science in which he advocated the elimination of 90% of the humans walking about on planet Earth. Apparently, he believes this is necessary in order to save the Earth from the ecological damage that we're causing. Overpopulation is about to destroy the Earth forever, and to save the Earth, we need to eliminate 90% of us.
That's a lot of us.
That would be about 5.5 billion, at least. He believes, as do many secularists, sadly, that humans are just another type of animal and thus have no more right to exist on this planet than any other type of animal. In fact, he was quoted as saying to a neighbor that we are no better than bacteria. Or actually, that was part of his speech. We're no better than bacteria.
You know, sometimes, at many points today, I've felt about that smart.
Bacteria?
I'm really having a tough time with this. But I'm hanging in there. You know, there's a link to the original posting of the story at SAS.org. And from there, you can get to this Dr. Pianka's website. And on his website, he has his obituary.
Mm-hmm.
He's still alive.
Right.
But he's written his own obituary just to keep other people, you know, from having to do it. And it's interesting. He has a bull bison named mm-hmm. Lucifer.
Yeah. And I'm not sure if that's a pet or what, but it's interesting.
There
anyway.
Are a lot of pictures of it.
Yeah. He seems to treat it as though it's a pet. I mean, you don't normally walk up to a bull bison and get friendly with it unless it knows you. So
no, not usually.
Yeah. But Dr. Pianka apparently knows his stuff very well. He is known as the Lizard Man. He's been at the University of Texas since 1968, published quite a few papers and books, and apparently is very well respected in his field, and we give him credit for that. However, when it comes to the order of things on this planet, the fact that he is actually advocating the use of aerosolized Ebola,
mm-hmm.
which he mentioned in his speech, to wipe out 5.5 billion people, you just have to step back and say, now, is this guy just confused, or is he truly a genocidal maniac?
Well, you know, he's assuming that 10% will survive.
Well, that's a pretty big assumption. Ebola is pretty contagious.
It's very contagious, and I guess his thinking is, well, once you get it, then you're not going to be taken care of, because the whole reason is that you all mm-hmm. die. And the 10% of us who don't want to die will just hole up somewhere or get vaccinated. I'm not sure what he's thinking.
Yeah, well, apparently he feels that this is a necessary step to protect the Earth, because the Earth is apparently the most important thing here, rather than humanity on Earth. What's really frightening is that according to the gentleman who reported this incident, Forrest Mims, who is the editor of a publication called The Citizen Scientist, Forrest Mims reported that the several hundred members of the Texas Academy of Science gave Dr. Pianka's speech a standing ovation.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Now, lest you think that Dr. Pianka is representative of the lunatic fringe of science, remember this. He got a standing ovation.
Mm-hmm.
Now, let's point out a couple of other discrete facts here and try to weave them together into some semblance of a tapestry. The Georgia Guidestones. We haven't done a show on the Georgia Guidestones, and we need to.
We've talked about them.
We have talked about them. These are a granite monument located in Georgia, not far from the 33rd parallel, interestingly enough. And on the Georgia Guidestones are a number of commandments or mm-hmm. suggestions or whatever in a number of different languages that basically outline the way life ought to be.
I think it's a plan for the New World Order. Here are the new rules.
That's one way of interpreting it. I think that's a very good way of interpreting it. And one of the goals listed there is to reduce the Earth's population to a sustainable level of 500 million people.
Let's see. We've got about close to 6 billion now.
6.5.
Ah. So if we want to go down to 500 million.
That would mean eliminating 6 billion
people.
Yeah. Well, apparently Dr. Pianka agrees with that and suggests aerosolized Ebola as a way to do it relatively quickly and painlessly. Well, you know, it's like a heart attack. Heart attack is only minor when it's happening to someone else.
Yeah.
Ebola is only relatively quick when it's someone else's insides who are turning to goo.
It's one of the worst ways to die.
Yeah. So, we will put a link to, well, the article is at Watcher Magazine. We'll certainly put a link to it in the show notes, and we encourage you to read this. But I think the point to take away from this is not that Dr. Pianka had the courage or guts or whatever you want to call it to speak this out loud in public, but the fact that it is a point of view that is held by a surprising number of people and a surprising number of people in influential positions.
I would not say he had the guts to do anything. He's gutless. Otherwise, they would not have stopped the filming.
Well, that's You're right. That's a good point.
He was a round fellow scientist that he knew, most of them. He knew he was going to get standing.
That's right.
He was in good company as far as he was concerned. He didn't want this to get out, but it did.
Right.
Somebody took notes.
Yeah. They were videotaping the presentation, and prior to the beginning, prior to his speech, somebody approached the gentleman operating the video camera and spoke to him and basically said, turn it off. And so Mr. Mims, who was in attendance, saw this, realized that something interesting was about to happen, and so he grabbed a notepad and began taking notes. And that's how we have a record of what happened here. Because when you go to Dr. Pianica's website, you don't see anything of this on his website.
I'd love to get Mims on the show.
Well, we can certainly get him a note and ask him, because this is really intriguing. This was, again, at Lamar University, Beaumont, Texas, the weekend of March 3rd through 5th. So this is about a month old, and it's just now getting out. And the newspaper in Seguin, Texas, picked up on it. In fact, I'll bet Dr. Pianica's name gets wider publication than he thought, because I saw that Matt Drudge, had linked to the story in the Seguin newspaper this afternoon. So the word is going to get out, and we will see what the reaction is. Well, okay, one rant down. We still have a bunch to go.
Oh, so many.
Let's go back to the immigration protests, shall we? That we talked about on Friday night.
Okay.
Apparently, there are groups, Hispanic groups, who are now calling for a major boycott on May 1st. They want to call this a day without Latinos. It's the Mexican-American Political Association. Their president, Nativo López, who was one of the organizers of the protest in Los Angeles, drew about 500,000 people last weekend. They are declaring May 1st a day without Latinos. They said this will send a message to Washington. We are looking forward to a major action in all large U.S. cities where immigrants make up a significant proportion of the workforce, he told the agents, I'm not pronouncing it right, the AFP, the French press.
Interesting that they chose Beltane.
That is very interesting. I'm glad you pointed that out. May 1st, May Day, which is also a communist holiday, but Beltane, right. So they are proposing to go on strike, a massive walkout. Don't go to work, don't go to school, apparently, and May 1st is the day that they've set for it. I say go for it, and I say American employers with any guts and scruples will say, fine, walk out May 1st, your job goes to an American citizen.
You know, there's an argument out there that I think is a specious one, that Americans don't want these low-level jobs.
Mm-hmm.
I'm using quoting marks. That's untrue. I think that there are many Americans out there that would be very, very happy to work as a maid or work as a janitor or even, you know, I say even because I think most people think, oh, gosh, I don't want to have to go out and pick tomatoes. But you know what? It's a job, folks.
Mm-hmm.
And the truth is that when it comes down to feeding your family,
You'll have a job.
You do what you have to do.
Right.
And these jobs, because they are automatically taken by somebody else, in many cases, I think there are lots and lots of farmers, especially big farmers out west and up north where they have these huge farms that require lots of strawberries and tomatoes and things like that. And they, frankly, I think they like to have somebody come in that they can pay cash to.
Exactly. The problem that we run into with this is that it's the employers who are driving it because there's a benefit to them. It's the same reason that many of our factories have moved overseas or south of the border where they can operate without the same restrictions as far as environmental concerns or, and as far as you know, paying workers a competitive wage.
Oh, yeah, and it's not just farmers.
No. Manufacturing.
Oh, yeah. Well, retail.
Yeah.
Look at the big raid that happened a year or two ago.
At Walmart, yeah. Mm-hmm. And those weren't Mexican workers. A lot of those workers were from the Czech Republic and other places in Eastern Europe.
But still, in fact, these marches with the illegals that have been taking place, it's not just Mexicans.
No.
You know, I've seen flags of all countries, which amazes me. You supposedly are marching to be accepted as a legal part of the United States of America, and you're waving your home country flag?
Yeah.
That's not scoring any points.
No.
Wave the American flag.
In fact, I did read that the some of the Spanish language radio stations that were encouraging people to go out and demonstrate advised them to bring American flags and wave American flags to show their patriotism. Smart move.
Mm-hmm.
But many of them did not do it. And there are, you know, many of them, in fact, even went further, as we talked about on Friday Night Show, carrying signs that said, this is our continent, not yours.
Mm-hmm.
Well, leave it to our Congress to respond in the appropriate way to the protests of last weekend. The immigration bill, now under consideration in the Senate, is apparently set to grant an even broader amnesty to illegals than legislation that was passed 20 years ago, 1986. In fact, Senator Jeff Sessions of Alabama, Republican from Alabama, said that this bill should be called No Illegal Alien Left Behind.
Mm-hmm.
In 1986, amnesty was granted to about 2.7 million illegal aliens. The legislation proposed now, the one that's being protested,
mm-hmm.
would grant 11 million illegals the right to stay in the U.S. and apply for full citizenship. Now, the backers of the legislation say that it's not exactly an amnesty because they would be fined $2,000 for being here.
Mm-hmm.
But current federal law is that illegals have to be packed up and sent home. So, man, it's a pretty good deal. Pay $2,000, you get to stay.
And I think they have to catch up on back taxes.
And they have to keep on back. And so, you know, there is a price to be paid, but come on.
Mm-hmm.
Let's be fair here. What really is getting the goat of some, what's really griping some conservatives now is a provision that was stuck into the bill that would allow illegal aliens eligible, make them eligible for in-state tuition costs at universities. That bothers me.
That bothers me.
A whole lot. I mean, when my daughter, who's a couple of years, our daughter's a couple of years away from qualifying for...
She'll be in college in a couple of years.
Yeah. Now my brain is warping here because I'm trying to put this in a way that...
She's more than likely going to go to a Missouri school, but if she wants to go to an out-of-state school, she's going to have to pay tuition that's 4 to 5 times higher.
That's right. If she, and that the fact that someone who shouldn't even be in the country, someone who broke the law to get into the country, can qualify for the cheaper rate,
mm-hmm.
when somebody who's a legal citizen, whose parents have been paying their taxes like they were supposed to, following the rules for our entire lives, has to pay a higher rate. That doesn't make any sense.
It boggles the mind, but I think what it shows is that ultimately this is a global effort. Borders don't matter anymore to those who are planning all of this. We've talked about, you call them what you want to, the Illuminati, call them the family, the cabal, whatever you want to call them.
Mm-hmm.
There are groups of people who are at the top of the pyramid,
mm-hmm.
And they are the politicians who are making the contracts and the deals and the treaties, like mm-hmm. NAFTA. And the whole plan is to eventually have one world government with 10 regions.
Yeah, exactly. And it just illustrates how the two major parties in the United States are opponents in name only,
mm-hmm.
and that they are working together. One of the major sponsors of this the tuition provision in the illegal in the immigration reform bill is Senator Orrin Hatch of Utah, who's one of the most conservative members of the Senate.
Yeah,
he's on the same side of this as Edward Kennedy.
Oh, head explode!
I know. What sense does this make? We're in an alternate universe here. I'm convinced. I mean, last week I find myself agreeing with the ACLU and the NAACP,
mm-hmm.
and now we see Orrin Hatch on the same side as Edward Kennedy. Nothing makes any sense anymore.
And I agree with Ed Asner.
Oh.
I thought I would never agree with Ed Asner. I love Ed Asner
as an actor.
I love the characters he's played, but you know what? The characters he plays are not Ed Asner.
Right. Ed Asner is... A
he
flaming
just politically
liberal.
politically, he's way, way, way to the left of where I am.
Yeah, and
but boy, I agree with him on some stuff regarding 9/11.
I agree.
That scares me.
Yeah, and again, we want to make the point very clear that we do not have a problem with people who want to come into the United States and become American citizens to better their lives.
This has nothing to do with prejudice.
No.
None at all.
I mean,
this has everything to do with the fact that there are certain rules.
Right.
And those of, you know, it's that, you know, this is going to remind me of a biblical story. And it's not a comfortable one to be compared to, but the old prodigal son.
Mm-hmm.
The son that stayed home often gets sort of left out of the story.
Right.
But he was really crabby about the whole thing. Now, mind you, we're talking about somebody who was a son in the first place, the son, the younger son who just decided he was going to take off with his inheritance. But the other son stayed home, and he did all followed all the rules. And when the other one came in, God said, the father said, you know, I'm going to give you the fatted calf and the ring off my finger, and the other son got cheesed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I can understand why that son got cheesed. I really can. And I know that it's not a perfect fit with what we're talking about here. But there are rules. And I feel like a young man or woman coming into this country illegally, getting to go to college for, and I'm betting they'll actually get to go for next to nothing.
Mm-hmm.
If enough deals are worked out, it really bothers me because you and I work really, really hard.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess as a Christian, I'm trying to look at this, and that's why I brought up the whole biblical
son,
story.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
Because that's what makes me uncomfortable. I feel like I have a right to be cheesed and a right to rant.
Yeah.
But I also know, and this is the hard thing about this, that what is right in my eyes is not always right in God's eyes. And I think maybe I can take comfort in the fact that even though there are men and women who are planning a one-world government, God knew about it before this world was ever created.
Mm-hmm.
And he's in charge.
Yeah. Well, and it's easy to see when you raise that point, it's easy to see why some Christians and why some church denominations are coming down on the side of the illegals in this fight. But as you pointed out, the drive to open the borders is very definitely part of the one world government movement, which of course is a major part of end times prophecy.
It is.
So
before I forget, I have to bring in something that a clergyman said, Catholic clergyman, by the way. So if you're listening, Eric John Phelps, you'll just go, yeah, I knew it. But a gentleman who was on Fox today, and he was saying in defense of the notion of giving amnesty that the American population, those who are legal, is aging. And we don't seem to be replacing ourselves with younger versions at any very good rate, at a lousy rate. Brain's starting to shut down. His point is that we need young workers because we're just not having families.
Mm-hmm.
And isn't it interesting that he would make that point? We need these nice young foreign workers to come in and be given amnesty so they can put Social Security money into the system to support you older Americans.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
I thought, what an odd take on that. And it really did remind me of Eric John Phelps because he said, and I don't know that I 100% agree with this, but it sure is intriguing. He says that one of the goals of the Roman Catholic Church is to bring in families from Latino families primarily that have huge families.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're all going to be raising them Catholic.
Yeah. Oh, that's the theory anyway.
Yeah.
And that certainly, as we talked about Friday, it seems to be fitting in with what he outlined as the plan of the Jesuit order. Well, let's move on to some other ranty stuff. We've got a very interesting situation in Washington as they try to replace the disgraced Michael Brown as the head of FEMA. Here we are months after the disaster that was Hurricane Katrina. And they still haven't found a replacement as the director of FEMA, because apparently nobody wants the job.
I can't say I really blame them.
It's a pretty small community. There aren't a whole lot of guys that specialize in disaster management.
Well, there aren't that many horse show directors. And those that are really good at their job at horse show, they don't want to leave it.
No, that's a nice life.
Oh, it's a great
very Tony crowd that you hang around with. Well, apparently they've been around the country and they've been soliciting applications from guys in this rather narrow field, and hurricane season's 2 months away, and they still have not found anyone to replace Brownie as the head of FEMA. And so the Bush administration is apparently going to the guy who's been the interim director now since Michael Brown stepped down, and that would be R. David Paulison, a former fire official. As somebody pointed out, some people would take this as an insult because they've been all over the country trying to get other experienced disaster management officials to take the job, and they've all said, no, thank you. So we'll see what happens, but it does not bode well, and it does not, it's not exactly a vote of confidence for the way the administration is handling the situation.
You know, it's lousy because that is a thankless job. It's a difficult job, but more than that, you got to feel like you're being put there to take a fall.
Yeah, the general manager of emergency planning in Los Angeles, a gentleman named Ellis Stanley, said, quote, "You don't take the fire chief job after someone has burned down the city unless you're going to be able to do it in the right fashion," end quote. So he's one who's declined to apply for the job.
Oh, my gosh.
So we'll see how that goes.
Hey, there's another story I want to talk about. Now, I posted this actually on Sunday.
Okay.
But it's something that we didn't get to talk about on Friday. It's this notion of Donald Rumsfeld's idea of countering a war that's going south by taking over the media. And we've talked about this a little bit before, but you know what we found out? There's a story that's actually posted April 2nd, and the headline of the story on Watcher Magazine is America's War on the Web. And there's a link on there to the Information Operations Roadmap from 2003. It's Rumsfeld's idea of how to counter bad press when you're at war. And it essentially involves taking over the Internet.
Information is a key commodity at all times, and especially in times of war. But in a world, well, perception is reality. Let's just be honest. And if you can control what people think, you're way ahead of the game.
And I think we're seeing the implementations of that since 2003, this whole blog thing.
Yeah, that was really interesting, that blogger battalion or whatever down at CENTCOM.
Well, it's called a Truth Squad in this document. You can download the
PDF. Truth Squad?
They're called Truth Squads. If the war is going bad, you get the Truth Squad out, and they get on the Internet, and they get on the airwaves, and they talk up how well things are going. It's just psyops and propaganda.
That is frightening. That almost sounds like something right out of
1984,
Orwell.
Exactly.
Wow. I'd glanced at the article when you posted it, but, you know, we had storm preparations here in the bunker.
We did. This is a 115-page PDF. Download it. You want to keep this on your hard drive.
Yeah.
Print it out if you don't like to read off your screen, because this is well worth a read.
The Pentagon is apparently already...
And it's redacted.
Really?
Yeah.
Interesting.
There are sections that are redacted.
Boy, I've not read too many redacted documents. This should be pretty exciting.
Yeah.
The Pentagon is spending almost $400 to implement the recommendations of this document by the year 2009. Well, you know, I'm going to have to read this and then compare this to that document that was prepared by Lieutenant Colonel Michael Aquino, he of the Temple of Set, some years back.
I'd forgotten about that.
He prepared a document called Mind War. Which was part of his recommendation that the government create, that the army create the First Earth Battalion, featuring warrior monks who would employ information warfare, basically, to win a battle. This is sort of a modification of that, because, you know, the electronic media wasn't quite as developed and the Internet wasn't quite as pervasive back then, even though his document isn't that old. But we'll put a link to the Mind War document that Michael Aquino wrote on the show notes. I've got a copy of that I downloaded to my hard drive here. But yeah, PSYOPs is definitely 21st century warfare, and it has been really useful to rely on the internet as a source of information these last few years, because as we've come to learn, sadly, the news sources that we thought we could trust, you know, the old media, mm-hmm. television, newspaper, radio, which has consolidated into the hands of a very few media corporations, can't be trusted.
No.
I mean, that's just the bottom line. You can't trust the mainstream media to deliver all of the information.
You can't, and I think that's probably why we saw the deregulation of radio, the media, because
exactly.
it used
yes.
to be you couldn't own more than what?
Seven. You could not own more than seven AM, FM, and TV, so you could own 21 media properties.
Uh-huh.
I used to work for a company in Peoria that was AM, FM, TV, and that's the most you could own, one of each in one market. And you could not own, if you had those three, you could not also own, say, a newspaper in the same town.
Mm-hmm.
But that's
because
not true anymore.
Because you create the news. You are the news.
Right.
If you have that many. You have to have competition in order to keep honesty there.
Exactly. And now you look at any of the major media, any of the major markets, rather, and even the smaller markets. I mean, you can't even go to, like, Waterloo, Iowa without running into a Clear Channel station or an Entercom or Infinity or Emmis or, you know, one of the big broadcasting companies in radio. Here in St. Louis, you've got like three companies that own about 12 radio stations between them.
Mm-hmm.
And that makes up about half of the listening audience or better.
We have three talk stations. Were you telling me we have three talk stations?
We have
three news stations.
We
no,
have
no,
three,
sports.
Three talk stations in town, yeah.
Yeah, and we have
and
three,
we've got
sports
three sports talk stations in town. And yet... And these stations, the talk stations, will syndicate programs from elsewhere around the country. For example, you'll get Rush Limbaugh, who's on, oh, I don't know, 300 or 400 radio stations.
Yeah.
So you get one point of view. During that time of day, no matter what market you go to, you've got that point of view.
Mm-hmm.
You'll get a little later in the day, and you may get, Hugh Hewitt or Neil Bortz or somebody else.
Or Bill O'Reilly
or
Sean
Bill
Hannity.
O'Reilly or Sean Hannity in a bunch of markets. Laura Ingraham, you know, covering 200 or 300 stations.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas previously, you know, before syndication, you didn't have that. And before you had one company like Clear Channel or Emmis owning, you know, 200 radio stations, you didn't have that. So the editorial perspective out there is very narrow and growing narrower. The same is true on... and I guess it's always been true on television, because you had always had the three big networks. I begin to wonder now that my perspective has changed on the mainstream media, whether the days of the investigative reporter, you know, the Walter Winchell era,
mm-hmm.
whether it really ever existed or whether those guys were feeding PSYOP information. And in fact, it's very possible that that's the case, because a lot of the guys who went on to become very big in the media in journalism and in Hollywood, after World War II, came out of the Army's World War II PSYOPs programs.
Mm-hmm.
So that'd be interesting to do some research into that.
You know, it's like in some ways, it's like going into politics. If you go into an information, we'll call it a science.
Mm-hmm.
In order to get at the top mm-hmm. and be nationally or internationally recognized and read or you know watched, you have to play ball,
right. Vox Day, who does a column for WorldNet Daily, and who's an independent thinker, does a daily blog, very popular, and he's a very thought-provoking guy, had pitched to a publisher the idea of a book called Media Horrors. Again, that's a very provocative title.
Oh, yeah.
It's the kind of thing that would stand out on a bookstore shelf. And the publisher was all for it until he realized that he planned to write about conservative television hosts like Bill O'Reilly, as well as liberal
mm-hmm.
television hosts like,
mm-hmm.
you know, whoever on CNN. And then they killed the idea. They
yeah.
basically paid him to just take the idea and go away.
Oh, exactly. I mean, Laura Ingraham could have written that. And
it would be a bestseller.
Oh, yeah.
As long as she limited it to liberal pundits. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And that's what, you know, that's the way the game is played. And I think what happened with the internet is that it exploded too quickly and allowed people like us too much access to
uh-huh.
Express themselves without the control of the mainstream media, without the control of the networks, you know, keeping everyone in line.
Mm-hmm.
And this Rumsfeld project is the military, the intelligentsia's way of getting it back under control.
Well, it's interesting that you said the word project because it does come out of PNAC.
PNAC.
The Project for the New American Century.
How interesting. The ones who decided that attacking Iran and Iraq it was a good idea in the first place.
Yeah, and this is an organization that is not even part of the government.
Not officially.
No, no, but they really are part of the shadow government.
That's the thing that surprised me is seeing that here that a PNAC document is redacted.
Well, you know, redaction may be a strong word, but there are portions of it, according to this article, that were not included.
Mm-hmm.
And it, the writer of this article was surprised that something was disseminated to the public. And
yeah.
Not everything's in there.
That is very curious.
Yeah.
Well, again, links to those will be in the show notes, as with everything that we talk about here on this program. Is there anything else? Oh, there was something that caught my eye I just wanted to touch on because we didn't have time on Friday. Blackwater USA is doing something that we suspected they were going to do for a long time. And now they're making it official. They say now they are basically putting up their for-hire sign as a freelance army. Yeah. Yep. We've known that Blackwater USA, which is a security firm, when they show up in Iraq, they're usually referred to as private contractors.
Mercenary.
Yeah, mercenary is the word that's more accurate.
Yes.
When the story came out in Iraq a couple of years ago about the private contractors who were attacked and were, you know, hung up and, you know, burned and just horribly mutilated, it was really a horrible story.
It's a horrible story. It shouldn't happen to anybody.
No, but the first reaction you think of was when they're saying private contractors that you're thinking poor guys wearing hard hats who pour concrete for a living.
Right.
Instead of these guys dressed in black wearing body armor and carrying automatic weapons.
Right.
And, well, Blackwater has stepped out, and they have announced that they are now putting itself up as an army for hire. Wherever there's trouble in the world, if you got cash, Blackwater will go. Kofor Black, who is the vice chairman of the company, said, "We are low cost and fast. The issue is, who's going to let us play on their team?"
Oh, that's frightening.
Yep. Yep. Unlike national and multinational armies, the article says, which tend to get bogged down by political and logistical limitations, Black said, Blackwater could have a small, nimble, brigade-sized force ready to move into a troubled region on short notice.
You know, it's really funny. The movie Terminator. Mm-hmm. Not Terminator, but...
Predator?
Oh, gosh. Predator. Thank you very much. One of the... Oh, boy, the brain is just shutting down. I need coffee.
And carbs.
Yes, coffee with carbs. Coffee made of donuts. Predator is one of our favorite movies.
Mm-hmm.
And I love Arnold Schwarzenegger. I love the way he delivers lines. I think it's great. But you know what? He plays a mercenary in that movie.
Yes, he does. And his team are basically mercenaries, right?
Oh, yeah. And they're set up as the good guys. They're the heroes.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe sometimes there are moments when a mercenary outfit, and that's essentially, you know, military for hire,
mm-hmm.
Goes to the highest bidder, and maybe there are times when they have mercenaries have gone in and they have saved the day. But it just struck me as you were talking that movie, it makes them look like big heroes.
Yeah, and this is what we're seeing now. And Blackwater, like some of the other companies that we've made reference to, like Wackenhut, is primarily made up of former members of elite. Military units like the mm-hmm. Navy SEALs and Army Rangers and so forth.
Yeah.
And right now, in fact, they provide security for the U.S. ambassador to Iraq.
That's very interesting.
Yeah. They've got a special contract with the State Department to provide security in Iraq.
Well,
not United States Marines, not United States Army or Army Rangers. They have hired out the security of the U.S. ambassador to Iraq to Blackwater USA.
Well, Wackenhut guards most of the...
Mm-hmm.
The government installations here, so...
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it raises a lot of questions. First of all, the ethics of it. Secondly, how do these guys get the contracts? Are these guys leaving the military and then using their military contacts in order to get the contracts for their new
mm-hmm.
companies? There are a lot of issues here, but what's really creepy is that these guys are not just operating overseas. As we talked about extensively after Hurricane Katrina, these guys were patrolling the streets of New Orleans and other areas along the Gulf Coast, working for the United States government on United States soil, and presumably carrying weapons to keep the peace among American citizens.
Yeah, that is really frightening.
That is really creepy. And as we predicted, we were going to see more and more of that.
Well, I think we're probably about over for today. My brain really is shutting down. But yeah. You know what? Tomorrow's going to be a better day. Yep. And I'll be very much alert, or I'll be dead. Or I'll have gone off this program. So keep me in your prayers. Now, you did hear Derek say earlier that we did not get to interview Guy Malone because of the storm. So he was going to be our guest this week. So guess what? You get four more of these rants.
That's right. 5 days. This is going to be a total rant burger this week. It's a rant-a-thon.
Burger.
That's
legal. I may go make one.
So, comments. Yes, we like your comments, your suggestions, and...
Ideas for Watcher. We get those, and I love them.
We've got some great suggestions on stories this week. Yep. People sent links into some great articles this week. Send those to radio@peeringintodarkness.com.
And if you want to join the forum, you can always go there. It's peeringintodarkness.com/forum. And, of course, if it's a Watcher magazine thing, you can send it to Sharon@watchermagazine.com or news@watchermagazine.com. We've got dozens of email addresses.
We keep
people guessing.
Yeah. But the guys in the white truck outside know right where to find us.
That's right. Yeah. If they just put that the little cap back on our chimney, we'd
That'd
be great.
That'd be really helpful. Yes.
We'd be glad to. Can we put the radio thing in there? No.
Until tomorrow, I'm Derek Gilbert.
I'm Sharon Gilbert. Have a great evening, everybody.
Gonna step up to the microphone. Say it like